Hello, hockey fans, and welcome to this week's edition of From the Press Box here at the AHL Report. My name is Amy Johnson. I'm the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report and your host for this program. And I'm, of course, joined each week by my fabulous co-host, the founder and editor-in-chief of Rocket Sports Media and all of the brands, All Habs Hockey Magazine, the AHL Report, all of them, Mr. Rick Stevens.
I'm very pleased to be here once again to talk AHL hockey.
We love it. It's great. And we've been hearing lots of great feedback from our listeners that they're really enjoying the coverage, and especially having some English coverage. And it's been really good. I can't believe we're on episode 12, where the season is just steaming along here, it seems. But Rick, I think we're going to start off. I know we have a lot to cover today, but we're going to start off with something that's not steaming along so well, and that would be the Laval Rocket.
Didn't have such a good week, did they?
Did not have such a good week, I must say. You know, it was really encouraging. They were in such a slump last week when we talked during from the press box. They were in such a slump and finished their road trip on a high note. Michael McNiven was in net. They were at the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, which is a really tough team to beat, especially on home ice. And they managed to pull out an overtime win, and it was just, you know, it was just the momentum they needed coming home, as we spoke last week, coming home to face the Binghamton Devils on Wednesday, and then a back-to-back Friday, Saturday against the Toronto Marlies. So we're looking at divisional rivals. We're looking at just franchise rivalries. We're looking at teams, especially with Toronto, who are at the top of the standings, would be tough opponents. And so they'd have all this momentum and motivation and things that they did well. And it should be a really great, you know, transition right into those three games. And well, needless to say, it didn't quite go that way.
What did I say last week? I said, don't look past the Binghamton Devils the pair of games against the Marlies. And what happened?
They lost 2-1 in overtime. 2-1 against the Binghamton Devils. Charlie Lindgren looked great. He very good goaltending once again from Mr. Lindgren. But things just never came together. The theme that we're going to see as we briefly just kind of talk about what's happened in the last three games, the theme is that shots on goal aren't there. Dangerous shots aren't there. Going to the net isn't there. And most importantly, scoring isn't there. And to only be able to muster one goal. Now, granted, they got the first goal of the game, and it was Jeremy Gregoire on the power play. But then that's all they could do for the rest of the game against the Binghamton Devils, which, I mean, they're a good team, but they're not that good, especially coming off of the Lehigh Valley win. So you were right. Perhaps they were already thinking ahead to Toronto, but boy, Toronto sure handled them pretty well on Friday and Saturday night. They lost 3-1 on Friday, and then Saturday afternoon was just one of the worst games I think I've seen them play. They lost 5-2 on Saturday afternoon. And, you know, penalties continue to be an issue, Rick. And I know that we've both heard Sylvain Lefebvre talk constantly about needing to be better with the discipline, especially with a weak penalty kill. But again, they're not getting, you know, two goals on Saturday and one goal on Friday. I mean, they're not scoring. They're not scoring, and they're shooting themselves in the foot by taking penalties.
And given the talent they have, they should be better on the power play. The power play has been one player. Chris Terry, 8 power play goals.
Yeah.
And that's not a surprise that he's, you know, he's a weapon on the power play. His one-timer, it was the same thing last year, but you need some other guys helping out.
Right.
And it's just not happening. The power play is not happening. I don't like their play in their own end. You look down the stat sheet and you've got, Dan Audet at minus 11, Terry at minus 12, Jelena minus 8. There doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesiveness. There doesn't seem to be a lot of working together. Maybe it's too early to say this, but I don't love the chemistry on this team. And we talked a bit about that last week with bringing in Adam Cracknell and in a move to address that. And that was proved to be a solid addition, but needs more than that. And it seems that they're not playing together on the ice, and it's really showed, as I said, particularly on the defensive side.
Well, and it's, you know, especially that Friday game, it was tied 1-1 at the end of the first period, and they had a good first period. It was Nikki Petty who scored the goal, the tying goal towards the end of the first period, which triggered the rain down of teddy bears for the teddy bear toss night, which I will, as I said last week, I was kind of waiting with bated breath. I tip my hat to the folks in Laval. They came out full force with the teddy bears. So that was great to see. So they had momentum. They played a good first period, and to begin the second period, suddenly Garrett Sparks was no longer in the crease for Toronto, but sitting on the backup goaltender's stool instead. Well, it turns out that he tweaked something, period, and he would not play the rest of the weekend, as a matter of fact. And so that was a prime opportunity right there, you know, and at the end of the first period, build your momentum. You've now got a new netminder in who didn't think he was going to be playing. And things just went really, really, really downhill from there. And as you said, you know, there are times the defense looks good. There's times it looks god awful. Saturday afternoon, there were three guys standing near the paint that allowed a cross ice pass to go right through the crease to the other side, and the Marlies scored backdoor on Michael McNiven. Things like that can't happen, and the penalties have to stop happening. I mean, Dan Audet got ejected from the game in the third period with a game misconduct for elbowing a guy in the head and knocking his helmet off. Fortunately, he didn't get suspended. What's that?
He's a goon.
Yeah. That's right.
No, he's
new role for Daniel Audet is gooning it up out there. But fortunately, he wasn't suspended for it, because there was a chance that maybe he could have been. But things like that, just, it's got to be better this week. Now, they've had this week off. Will things get better? You know, we're hoping. They've had, I don't want to say they've had this week off. They're not playing again on Saturday, so they have a full week between games. Mike McCarron is slated to be back at practice today, from the cut to his ear that he took. You know, I've seen some reports saying that he might need a special helmet to protect the scar and those kinds of things, that he had quite a number of stitches and whatnot. But he is supposed to be back practicing with the team today. If they can get him back in for this weekend against Charlotte, that could be a boon, especially on special teams, if he can provide some screen and some energy and those kinds of things. In addition to that, the kind of more exciting news is the return of Nikita Sherbak. He was sent back down from the Canadiens over the weekend, and is also expected to be practicing this week. Not sure yet if he's going to play this weekend, but Sylvain Lefebvre believes wholeheartedly that he will be back in the lineup before Christmas. So if it's not this weekend, I would say we'll see Sherbak back in the lineup next week when they come home again. So, Rick, that's another key piece of the puzzle that could help things along.
For sure. McCarron has been good in the AHL this season, 11 points in 16 games. Sherbak was fabulous, 9 points in 6 games. And, you know, if he keeps that pace, he's going to end up back in the NHL, where he looked very good this season before his injury. But as long as he's in Laval, the Rockets should take advantage and hopefully they can reel off a couple wins, although it's going to be tough. Charlotte's pretty good this year. 16 wins in 25 games in the tougher Atlantic division. They're second place. So it's not going to be easy facing them at home. But it's a good time for if chemistry is an issue, it's a good time for them to go on a long road trip and work on that.
That is true. They leave later this week for Charlotte. As you say, Charlotte is dangerous. They're on a 5-0-0-1 streak right now, which means that they have some momentum. They also get a good tune-up this week before Laval shows up, because the Lehigh Valley Phantoms are there tonight and tomorrow night in Charlotte. So Charlotte's going to have, you know, contention with another very solid, very offensive team before Laval gets there. So it's not going to be an easy weekend, but fingers crossed, hopefully they can right the ship. And, you know, the big thing is the discipline. They really need to stay out of the penalty box. And we will see what happens. We will have all the details, of course, at the AHL report. I will be providing full game updates of both of those games. Both games are, as a heads up, both games are a bit of an odd start time. Saturday's game begins at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Sunday's game begins at 1 o'clock. It's a very early matinee game on Sunday. So be sure to follow along on Twitter. We'll have all of those game updates and fill you in on everything again next week. Moving along, just some AHL news to take care of. I'm going to start with the bad news first, because there was one suspension. No, I'm sorry. There were two suspensions that were just announced today that I can take care of. Tucson Roadrunners forward Nick Merkley was suspended for 2 games for high sticking in a game at Stockton on December 9th. And then Bridgeport Sound Tigers forward Ross Johnston was suspended for 1 game for supplementary discipline in a game at Springfield on December 9th. So we have one out west, one here. Moving on then, of course, we have the player of the week, and the player of the week comes on a team that is just tearing things up in the Eastern Conference right now. That's the Syracuse Crunch, and Anthony Cirelli was named the CCM AHL player of the week, Rick, and he had 3 goals, 4 assists, and was a +6 in 3 games last week. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, very nice.
Cirelli from the Memorial Cup. He played for Oshawa, and I think it was his goal that clinched the Memorial Cup championship for the Generals in 2015, I believe that was.
Okay.
And I think Mike McCarron was part of that particular team, or was it the year after? Congratulations to Anthony Cirelli.
Speaking, so as I just mentioned with the Syracuse Crunch, Rick, I have to take a moment to talk about two particular teams who are just tearing things up in the league right now, and Syracuse is one of them. They're on a 9-game winning streak right now, which is quite impressive. In fact, the only team who is anywhere close to that and beating it would be the other team I wanted to talk about briefly, which is the Manitoba Moose, who are on a 10-0-0-1 streak. Syracuse has always been good. Syracuse has always been tough. Manitoba is just on a hot streak this year. Their players, and we talked a little bit about this last week because of the players of the week and the players of the month and whatnot, but both of these teams really, really just kind of showing their stuff this year.
Yeah, Jack Roslovich still is at second in AHL scoring. playing for the Moose. And it's interesting to me because it doesn't always work this way. Both of the NHL teams are kind of the class of the NHL this year, Tampa Bay Lightning mm-hmm. and the Winnipeg Jets. And in fact, they had a kind of a showdown that went into overtime a couple days ago. But that was an excellent game. Two very good teams this year. They also have two very good farm teams.
Yes, they do.
The Crunch and the Moose. Credit to both of those organizations and the depth of the organization, their prospects that they're successful at both the AHL and NHL level.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how long they can continue those streaks. They're getting up into some impressive numbers there. But it's especially interesting for Laval fans to keep an eye on what Syracuse does. Syracuse is currently sitting third overall in the North Division, behind the Amerks and the Marlies. Now, granted, I mean, the Marlies are sitting up top with a 25-0-0 record. So no one's catching them for a little bit. And they're on a 4-game win streak as well. But it'll be interesting to see how those statistics start to move, especially as, you know, Laval hopefully gets things back on track and tries to get back into playoff contention, because right now they are sitting at fifth overall in the North Division, which is out of a playoff spot currently. So very interesting to watch the standings, especially this time of year. Another thing that's always interesting to watch out for this time of year is, of course, that time of year that we all look forward to if you are a hockey fan, and that is it is almost time, Rick, for this year's World Junior Championship. And preliminary rosters for selection camps have started to be released, and not going to go too in-depth this week on things until we get a more solid look at what the rosters are really going to look like coming into the first round of relegation and whatnot. But there are some really big names on some of these teams, and I think it's going to be a really exciting tournament this year, as it is every year. But I think there's some really key players this year.
Yeah, it's tradition. It's a tournament to watch. Everybody watches it. With respect to the Canadians, they respect how what an important tournament it is, and have decided to allow Victor Mete the chance to make the team. You would think that there's been some sort of arrangement made to release him, that they have some sort of assurance that he's going to make the team. We saw, at the World Junior Summer Showcase that Mata wasn't necessarily in the plans for, the Canadiens' defense. Dom Ducharme, the head coach, he had Victor. One of the games, he was a second-pairing defenseman, but he was a healthy scratch in another, and a seventh defenseman in yet another game. So you would think after that his place wasn't assured, but I'm just guessing here that in order to go through that process of releasing him, that Team Canada has given the Canadiens some sort of assurance that Victor Mete will be on the roster for Team Canada.
Which would be great experience for him. You know, his ice time has been greatly reduced the last few weeks on the nights that he plays. And so this is a great way to get his confidence back up, just get some more development under his belt, get that experience of playing on kind of the world stage, as it were. He mentioned that to us when we talked to him at the summer showcase in Michigan, that he was kind of chomping at the bit to get back to Team Canada over the summer and really try to make the World Junior team this year, that he came close and, you know, just didn't. So this is a good opportunity for him. If he does in fact make the team, I certainly hope that he's given the opportunity to really seize the moment and really really do some great things. Some of the other names on the Team Canada roster, you know, of course, you've got Logan Stanley, who's always a name to watch out for. Nick Suzuki is always fun to watch. Always fun to watch.
And there's a guy that has a couple of NHL games under his belt as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Taylor Radish, Michael McLeod. There's a lot of good names on Canada's preliminary roster. For Sweden, two big names that stand out for Sweden are Elias Andersson, who we also saw in Michigan, and of course Rasmus Dahlin, who, if anyone has not had the chance to watch him play, and it's, I can't imagine him not making Sweden's team, you will be amazed at what you see when you see him play. Both of them are quite special to watch on the ice. They both did very well in the summer showcase and should be names that you hear spoken of quite often during the upcoming tournament. And lastly, of course, USA's roster. USA, and I am not simply saying this because I'm American. The U.S.'s potential roster has some danger on it. You know, on the blue liners, Quinn Hughes is a tremendous defenseman. He's a little guy. He's 5'9". He's the smallest D-man out there, but man, can he skate, and he's just something else to watch. Also making the preliminary roster for selection camp is Ryan Lindgren, and that's Charlie Lindgren's brother. So we'll keep our fingers crossed there, see how Ryan does as well. But on the forward side, perhaps, you know, fans might know some of these names, like Kyler Yamamoto, Brady Tkachuk, Casey Mittelstadt, Kiefer Bellows, big names, and of course, Ryan Poehling. And Poehling, as we've discussed, Rick, had standout year last year. His performance at the Summer Showcase was tremendous, and he's having another just insane season at St. Cloud. And he should be big. He should be one of the big guns for USA for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting with Ryan Poehling because you have some people who say, you know, they look at maybe his stat sheet or watch a YouTube video and are not that impressed. But every time we've seen him in person, he has performed far and above expectations. There's just something. He's a hockey player. There's just something about his poise on the ice. He's very smart. Has a good shot. You remember, there have been some people who have taken shots at his skating and the head coach of the U.S. team, who is his club coach too, was having absolutely none of that.
Basically said, well, if I don't know who's saying that, if they're saying that, then they're not, I don't know who they're watching.
But in addition, you mentioned, you know, there's names that potentially draft eligible players like Hughes and Tkachuk that could potentially go top five, top seven in the draft in June. So, the U.S. team is certainly has to be one of the favorites going into the tournament.
It's going to be exciting to watch. Of course, that all begins on Boxing Day. December 26th for those Americans that don't pay attention to the whole Boxing Day thing. So that's, and of course, maybe by next week we'll have a little, we might have a little better idea of what the final rosters are going to look like. And we'll have probably more of a bit more of a preview next week as we start to head into that tournament right before the holiday season. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Before we get to our top five, which, spoiler alert, we're in the holiday season, and since we're officially getting Christmassy, we have a very special holiday edition of Top 5 this week, and probably next week, too. So that is coming up momentarily. But first, no episode of From the Press Box would be complete without an edition of Where Are They Now, a.k.a. Journeys with Rick. But before I allow you to go on whatever long, I don't know if this week you have a stroll around the block or an around the world in 80 days journey for us, but I will make quick mention, since Laval is traveling to Charlotte this weekend, they will be seeing two of their former teammates, both of them in the Defense Corps. Philip Samuelson, who played with the St. John's Ice Caps before he was traded for, I believe it was in February of last year, was traded for Keegan Lowe, and actually went to Charlotte where his dad, Ulf Samuelson, was the head coach at the time. So he was playing under his dad's tutelage, was signed over the summer by Charlotte, and he's having quite a season down there as well. So Philip Samuelson will be there. And I know we had spoken about Josiah Didier earlier in the season. He started his season down with the ECHL team, the Florida Everblades, and has since been called up to Charlotte twice. And he is currently still in Charlotte. In fact, has stuck around long enough that a couple of guys that have come off of injury, instead of Didier going back down to Florida, there have been other members of the D Corps who have gone down instead. So he seems to be making an impression with the coaches in Charlotte. So the guys from the Laval Rocket will see Josiah Didier and Philip Samuelson this weekend.
Dids. We like dids.
I'm excited to get to what it's been a while since I've had a chance to watch Dids play a game. So we're, hopefully he's not too, we like how punishing Dids is, especially on the board. So hopefully he doesn't wreck too many Laval players, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Always like watching Didier and Learn Out, the Twin Towers, play together. And punishing is what they both did very, very well.
Absolutely. It should be a fun couple of games this weekend. So that I've now cleared my Where Are They Now plate, and I give you the spotlight, because we are all on the edge of our seats wanting to know where you're taking us this week.
So if I told you his first name was McKinley, would you know where I was going with this?
Probably not.
Well, then I'll have to introduce him by his more commonly known name, and that's Mac Bennett.
Oh, Mac McKinley, Bennett. Then. I don't think I know.
Mac Bennett, yes, indeed. Mac Bennett, talking about defensemen, Mac Bennett, defenseman, third round pick in 2009 by the Montreal Canadiens, picked him out of Hotchkiss. And Mac Bennett was, he's an interesting guy because he comes from hockey royalty. His grandfather, born in Saskatchewan, a good Canadian boy. His grandfather was a goaltender, played in two Memorial Cups, and then went on to play with the Boston Bruins of the NHL. He had Mac's two uncles, both played in the NHL. Harb Jr. had over 200 games in the NHL. His uncle Kurt, 580 games in the NHL.
Wow.
With the Flames, the Atlanta Flames at the time. And Mac's dad was drafted by the Atlanta Flames.
Huh.
Yeah. So that lineage there, you know, Mac's a hockey player. And Mac's sister played for in the NCAA for Boston. But Mac, after he was drafted, went to the University of Michigan, and he was there for 4 years playing for the Wolverines. That final year, he was a captain. He had some leadership qualities. And for a good portion of his time in Michigan, he was paired with Greg Patterin.
Oh, okay.
And you had Greg Patterson, kind of the tough, solid, stay-at-home defenseman. You had Mac Bennett, who was just this smooth skating, puck moving offensive defenseman. They were great together.
Mm-hmm.
Mac always, when we talked to him, I remember him telling me his idol was Mike Green. He wanted to be a Mike Green kind of, that's who he patterned his game after.
Mm-hmm.
His first pro season was with the Bulldogs, Hamilton Bulldogs, back in 2014-15. And played 59 games with them, had some injury issues, and those carried on to the next season. The next season, the Bulldogs went out to St. John's and became the St. John's Ice Caps. And so for the 15-16 season, Mac was out there. There's a combination of he had some injury problem, but he fell into being a healthy scratch at times. And, yeah. And it was odd because you'd see him have a good game and he'd be taken out of the lineup. And I remember talking to him and he said that the Canadians just seemed to have their mind made up about him. And so at the end of that year, he wasn't qualified. He wasn't brought back to the Canadians. And so he moved on to the Rochester Americans, and that was last season,
right.
With Rochester. He signed with them as a free agent. But he's one of those defensemen who is a bit cerebral. He really likes to. He's a smart guy, and he likes to learn the game. And he credits as many defensemen have. Donald Dufresne, the assistant coach now with Laval, as spending an enormous amount of time with him in the video room as Mac learned how to read play better and just improve himself, because he was kind of I don't say undersized, but slight. So he had to use positioning rather than his size to compete in the defensive zone. But I mentioned he was smart. While he was at Michigan, he earned a degree, and his degree was in musicology. Music. He had a love for music.
I sort of
history.
Remember that. Yeah.
And music history. And he always said that someday he wanted, you know, after he hung up the skates, that he wanted to go into the music business, probably as an audio engineer. He had a real fascination for that. And he would be the guy that would make the, cut the music that they would play in the dressing room, in Hamilton and St. John's. But he was a very enterprising young man, when he was still playing, he with a couple of other Michigan alums went in and they formed a business called State and Liberty Clothing. And it was performance dress shirts, I guess they called them, for athletes.
Okay.
Yeah. The athletes found that they couldn't find, dress shirts that kind of fit their frame. And so these ones weren't cotton dress shirts, they were polyester and spandex. So they had some stretch to them.
Right.
They were built with wicking fabrics and all that sort of thing. But a dress shirt. And, Bennett was the VP for marketing for that fledgling company who are doing, if you go online and they supply, they a lot of the NHLers are State and Liberty customers. They're pretty popular in that regard. Mac has moved on from that company. And he's last season was his last season in hockey with the Americans. And he's presently living in New York. And he's a recruiter for a company called Tech Systems. They recruit for the technology industry. And that's, as I said, a smart guy. He's moved into to that area, and who knows, maybe we'll hear of him in at some point pursuing his dream of being an audio engineer as well. Just a fascinating, absolutely fascinating guy. His fascinating background with the family background, fascinating as he went through his hockey career. And now a smart guy who's got a degree and who's making a life for himself after hockey.
Well, and you know, I love hearing stories about stories like this, because every athlete at some point, whether they face it and accept it and plan for it at a very young age, which guys like Mac Bennett did, or later, at some point, they all have to come to the realization that there will need to be life after hockey. And what is life after hockey going to look like? You know, we talked, it may have been last week, how you mentioned Brandon Prust is now coaching. And for a lot of players, life after hockey means staying in the game and staying in hockey, just in a different role. But for guys like Mac Bennett, it's always interesting to me to see, you know, people look at professional hockey players and they just see a professional hockey player, and they don't see the rest of the person, and they don't see that, you know, that person and those players, they have interests, they have hobbies, they're people like you and me. And so it's really interesting to me to see guys like Mac Bennett kind of spread their wings a little bit, and when they do hang up the skates, say, okay, maybe I'll get back to that at some point. But in the meantime, it's just very interesting to see guys, you know, spread their wings and really embrace the other things in their life that they enjoy doing, that a lot of them probably, since they were kids, have always had to put on a back shelf because there wasn't time for those other interests, because becoming a professional hockey player is a full-time job since the time you're a kid. And so kudos to Mac Bennett, stick tap to him for, I mean, not only the clothing venture when he was still playing, but you know, he's in a fully different realm now, and probably very successful. And it's just very interesting to see kind of the personalities come out with a lot of these guys once the playing days are no longer there.
Because some guys are genuinely lost once hockey ends, just genuinely lost. And not only in this particular case, you're right, they get to players sometimes get to explore different interests. But in this case, it was very strategic. And that's what I admire about Mac Bennett, is in talking to him, he said it on more than one occasion. You're only one hit away from
right.
having to find an alternate career. And Mac Bennett is 26 years old.
He's young.
He's lived a pretty full life already in hockey, but he was always planning for that next step, that next career. He's had a hockey career. He's been a VP of marketing in a clothing startup, and now he's on to a different one. So very smart, very strategic, and as you said, we'd like to highlight and feature people like that who've you know, got things together.
Absolutely, and it's, as you say, you know, there are a lot of hockey players that when they retire or unexpectedly have to retire, because you never know when that hit is coming, that do look a little lost. And it's something that I wish either player agents or someone, whether, you know, would help guide younger players a little bit more early in their careers to always have that in the back of their mind. Like, you know, don't be the player that, okay, hockey career has to end today, and now what do I do? you know, you never like to see that for any of these guys after being so successful in professional sports, where they just kind of flounder a bit trying to figure out, well, what do I do with my life now? So congratulations to Mac Bennett. Kudos to him, and a very good Where Are They Now?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. So now I guess that brings us to the always exciting portion of the show. Mm-hmm. And that would be our top five. Rick, it's almost Christmas. In case you didn't know.
Don't remind me. I've got so much to do.
Well, that's just it. I mean, December 1st rolled around for me, and everyone's like, yay, Christmas! And I was like, oh, God, shoot me now, because it needs to be like November 1st, because I'm so not ready for this. So it's taken me a little while to get Christmassy. I can officially say I think I just started decorating a little bit this week, and that's like a bare minimum, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I really am. Just behind the eight ball this year. But the one thing that I haven't done yet this year is listen to any Christmas music. It is December 12th, and I have not yet listened to a single Christmas song unless it's been forced upon me in some retail environment in which I'm just, that's the last thing I want to hear when I'm in crowded shopping areas. So, but I love Christmas music. Hopefully you love Christmas music. Hopefully the people listening to us love Christmas music, because we're going to talk. Our top five is kind of a dual top five. It's our top five best and worst Christmas songs. So with each, you know, with each step, number five, number four, number three, we're going to say what our, one of our most favorite Christmas songs and one of our most hated Christmas songs, because we all know every single one of you out there has probably a bigger list of Christmas songs that you hate over Christmas songs that you love, because there are some that are just so bad or so annoying or so overplayed, whatever the case may be. And remember, we want to hear your lists as well. So be sure to tweet them to us at the AHL report. We want to know, because if there's songs that I need to be blocking, I need to know about them. Or if there's songs that I don't know of, that I need to add them to my list. But I suppose before we start the list, Rick, I imagine that this is the No by Rick Stevens portion, because I'm sure that there are rules and regulations and exceptions and disclaimers and fine print that we all, well, maybe that you need to adhere to. We'll see.
So we're starting with our worst Christmas songs, our top five worst, and then going on to our top five best. We are. In anticipation.
I thought we were doing them at the same time.
No, we're doing worst first and then best.
Who's the producer of this show?
I forget.
Did I just lose control?
I used to know that. I've forgotten. But
fine.
For the exclusions of the bad songs.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting exclusions in there, like they really have to be bad songs, because there's also bad versions of good songs.
Oh, absolutely.
So my exclusions will be no bad versions of good songs. Like anything Christmassy by Maroon 5, you know, they could be good songs, but the Maroon 5 version is just bad.
Or anything Christmassy by Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber, Busta Rhymes, Justin Bieber, Little Drummer Boy. Little Drummer Boy is actually a pretty good song, but those two together doing it, awful, awful. Bruce Springsteen doing Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. Forget it. It's awful. But not a terrible, terrible song. So what I'm, my list of bad songs is just plain bad songs.
Okay.
Got it?
Got it.
All right. I'm ready.
Well, what, do you have honorable mentions for your bad songs?
I have honorable mentions for the good list, so we'll get to those in a minute.
Okay. All right, so we'll start with our worst, the worst songs.
Mm-hmm.
Number five for me is that god awful. Does this count as one of your exceptions? Because I don't even know if this is just a bad version of a regular good song or not. But that god awful, the Christmas song that the chipmunks do. We all know, and you can all hear it in your head right now. You can all hear it in those freaking annoying chipmunk voices.
It's Alvin and the Chipmunks.
And Alvin!
Yeah. I want a hula hoop. That's the part that's in my head. I want a hula
hoop. Oh my.
Yeah, Christmas, don't be late. No, I think that's their song. So yes, it's actually number five for me too. So
it just absolutely grates on me, the sound of I used to watch Alvin and the Chipmunks when I was a kid, and for whatever reason I tolerated their voices then, but the song I can't deal with.
So we agree on number five.
Was that your number five?
Yeah. It's my number five too.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
Honest to God,
I really don't know.
I swear you cheat. Somehow or another, you cheat.
Yeah.
So you equally cannot see, you equally cannot see or cannot stand that song.
Can't stand the song.
It's a bad song.
It's a bad song.
Well, it's a bad song. Okay, so number four, do you want to go or do you want me to give it another whirl here?
Go ahead.
On plenty of occasions, especially on, if anyone hasn't figured out that I'm in my car an awful lot with this job, driving all over Hell's Half Acre, all over the Northeast to cover the rock, it requires a lot of time in my car, which means I listen to a lot of music. And so there are plenty of stretches when I love putting on some 80s throwbacks. I mean, there's pretty much not anything that I won't listen to. But I'll watch it. I'll listen to 80s every once in a while, but there is a song that just grates on me every time I hear it. And it's by Wham. And it's called Last Christmas. And it is the whiniest Christmas song in the world, and I just can't stand it. And if you're not sure what song I'm talking about, Google it.
Yeah.
It's not?
No, I don't. I would probably remember to hear it.
Gave you my heart. At the Yes, now everyone's like, oh God, not that song. It's horrible. It is so whiny. I can't stand it. So it's my number four.
Okay, well, I don't have it.
So
if
sorry, I have
thought
to subject
of it,
all of
have
you
have
to my
it.
Singing voice.
Yeah. My number four is Blue Christmas by Elvis.
Oh, come on.
Oh, my God. It's got that Hawaiian-y thing going. I cannot stand it. I can't stand it.
Oh, come on. It's a great song. How can you hate the king?
I'm not hating on him. The song stinks. And the little backup singers with their Hawaiian thing going, forget it. It's awful.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, I disagree with you on that one. It's not on my top five, but I don't mind Blue Christmas by Elvis. It's a little sappy every once in a while, but number three, again, as soon as this comes on the radio, if this comes on in the car, off immediately, change the channel. I'm not listening to it. And that is Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time. Because it's just annoying. There is nothing redeeming about this song. There's nothing Christmassy about this song. It's just irritating. And it's just absolutely irritating. And I'm not singing it. So I hope you know which one it is.
And I'll reveal, I'll jump ahead a bit. It's number two on my list. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. And it seems to me like it was a cash grab or something, because
it's
awful. It the lyrics are bad, the tune is stupid, and then there's that bad synth in there that just makes it sound cheap. I put it number two on my list because it's an awful, awful song.
Yeah, I don't like it.
And so my number three, is that tune, Elmo and Patsy, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I don't understand. I just don't understand it. Like, what?
That's your number three?
It's awful.
It's my number one. Spoiler alert. That is my number one hated freaking Christmas song. It is the worst thing I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Nobody likes it. It's horrible.
It's terrible.
Why do people still play it? And what kind of morbid person writes a song about their grandmother getting killed by a reindeer coming home from the grandkids' house on Christmas Eve? I mean, like, well, you can say there's no such thing as Santa. Whatever. It's horrible. Okay, so we already know that your number two was Wonderful Christmas Time.
And your number one was Grandma. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So my number two is, and I, you know, back in the day in the 90s, I loved her pop stuff. She's got a tremendous voice. Had a tremendous voice for pop music and R&B. But any Christmas song that comes out of Mariah Carey's mouth, especially All I Want for Christmas Is You, just no. Just get out. Just like, get out of my car. Goodbye. You're walking the rest of the way if you want that on my radio. I just cannot deal with her Christmas music. It's just, it drives me insane, especially All I Want for Christmas Is You, because I feel like the radio plays it 80 billion times every holiday season.
It's sad because at her peak, she had unbelievable range, fabulous voice, and she's just let herself go in just about every way imaginable. Her voice is terrible now.
It is. And her holiday music is just not good. It's just not good.
So your number one was Grandma. My number one was I hate when, I've said it before, when groups try to hijack holidays. I always hated UNICEF hijacking Halloween. And in this case, it was the an appeal for Ethiopia or something. I don't even remember what it was. But it was the super group, all of these assembled super musicians called Band Aid.
And
Do They Know It's Christmas? It's just awful. It's just awful. It's sad. And Feed the World is the chorus. Terrible. Terrible.
Bad. And my list could really be a lot longer, but these were... like, I understand that every radio station feels the need to play wall-to-wall Christmas music from American Thanksgiving on, but they could really shorten that by about 2 weeks if they took out all of the crap Christmas music that they played and just played the stuff that people actually want to hear. Because I think that's the only reason that we have to be subjected to these god-awful Christmas songs as often as we do, because they're trying to fill 24 hours a day with Christmas music and half of it is bad. So that's my plea to radio stations. Either only do it for, like, I don't know, half the day and only play the good stuff, or shorten the amount of weeks that you do it and only play the good stuff. Because I guarantee nobody's asking you to play Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. You mentioned you have some honorable mentions for the good stuff.
Well, I actually like Christmas music for the most part. I do too. Despite what we've said, I like Christmas music. So I've to formulate my list, I've gone back and every single pick is traditional, kind of an old Christmas carol, traditional song. So that meant that some pretty good songs got bumped out. So those end up in my honorable mention.
Okay.
And for my first one, I'll go back to and blame it on my grade 3 teacher, Mrs. Breitsprecher. Yes, that was her name.
Third graders should not have to say Mrs. Breitsprecher or what. That's cruel and unusual punishment.
The thing is, that was only her name for half the year because she got married halfway through, and we had to then relearn her name. Yeah, it was great. Miss. I don't remember what her other name was. But she permanently embedded this song in my head. I can't get it out, so I have to mention it. And that's I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. So it is in my honorable mentions.
Really?
In my honorable mentions, again, as the top five is traditional, I have to put this in an honorable mention. It's Bob and Doug McKenzie, their 12 Days of Christmas. They end everything with "and a beer." they do. And the third honorable mention is from Vince Guaraldi and from the Charlie Brown Christmas special. And it's the Linus and Lucy theme. It's basically that song that Schroeder plays whenever Charlie Brown is trying to give directorial instructions.
Right.
And then Schroeder just plays. Everybody starts to dance.
That's
that
right.
That song.
Yeah. Very nice. I have, I equally enjoy a lot of Christmas music. I enjoy, as my traditional, regular, everyday music tastes, same goes for Christmas music, that I have a wide range of things I like to listen to for Christmas music. So my honorable mention, we could be here for another full episode if I tried to get through all of my honorable mentions. But two that I will mention are two of the sassiest Christmas songs around that I particularly happen to love, and that is Santa Baby and Baby It's Cold Outside. And I just, they're sassy, they're fun, they're, you know, they're kind of that, you know, wink wink, nudge nudge, it's they're very cute, and I don't care. And Baby It's Cold Outside gets a lot of bad press these days because everyone's so uptight. Well, you shouldn't force her to just stop. It's a fun song and it's very cute, and love them both. So those are the only two that I'm going to mention as my honorable mentions, because we could be here for a year if I mentioned all the ones that I actually like.
All right. So the top five Christmas songs.
Go for it.
Number five. God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. As I said, my list was going to be very traditional. And this is like a 16th century song, been around forever. It's just filled with minor chords and has that real kind of, I don't know, Christmas fire, just a nice feel to it. And it doesn't matter. I have a iconic version. I have on the other end of the spectrum, a Bare Naked Ladies version. And whatever version you hear, it's a good song. And it's known as the comfort and joy song. So what else do you want for Christmas? You want your family, you want comfort, and you want joy.
Well, that's true. Although you did say that any version of it that you get is a good one. So does that mean that if Justin Bieber sang God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen?
No, I say any version I have of it. Or if I didn't say that, that's what I meant to say.
Okay. Because I think the AHL report email, inboxes would be flooded with, oh, but what about this version by,
No.
you know.
Yeah.
So my number five is also a traditional song. And it's one of those that just, to me, I like it on like a, you know, really snowy Christmas night kind of thing when it's just everything's quiet outside, the snow's falling and the lights are on and those kinds of things. And that's O Holy Night. When performed by someone with a very, very strong voice, it can just be very haunting, but very beautiful. And yeah, I like O Holy Night a lot. It's a very, very powerful Christmas carol.
Well, I'll jump in and support that because it happens to be my number four. O Holy Night, it's a French carol dating back to the mid-1800s, Cantique de Noël. And it was taken from a poem. And it's just, as you say, it's got to be a strong voice. I know the one that people like to reference is Celine Dion, not exactly my favorite.
No, I don't like that one.
Andrea Bocelli, tremendous version of O Holy Night. And so that carol is my number four.
My number four is a classic Christmas carol, Christmas song, and it has to be like the original one. The original one. And that's White Christmas. There's nothing like that original version of White Christmas with that, you know, deep, deep bassy baritone voice, and it just gets me every time. And it's just happy and cozy, and I pity anyone who doesn't have snow on Christmas, because everything's supposed to be snowy on Christmas. So that's my number four.
Nice. We're to my number three, and that is What Child Is This? Another one that was written in the mid-1800s. What I found interesting is it was written by an insurance salesman. And no, seriously.
Okay.
You think it's clergy or something, but he had a severe illness. And it was after he recovered, he had this kind of spiritual awakening and wrote the lyrics. And it's the tune is Greensleeves. It's a traditional English folk song. And he wrote the lyrics, What Child Is This? And again, you got that haunting melody and just a really nice, really nice song. And what's your number three? Yeah.
My number three is actually one of your honorable mentions.
Hippopotamus.
Anyone who knows me knows that I am a gigantic child. I'm a gigantic kid at heart. And I don't care who knows it. Because it just makes life more fun. And there is no, I toyed with this being my number one overall, because I sing this at the top of my stinking lungs every time I hear it come on. And that is I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. And I am sure that it makes the tops of plenty of people's worst Christmas song lists, because I guarantee there are so many people that are just absolutely hate that song for how silly it is and her whiny juvenile voice. But the voice actor in me loves that voice. And B, it's so silly. It's just like kid wants a hippopotamus for Christmas. I mean, come on. You visualize the whole thing when you hear all the lyrics, and it's very fun. And it's one of my favorites. So it came
very
in.
Fun song.
It came in at number three for me.
At number two, I have Carol of the Bells. And I like the song, but partly it's kind of a nod to my Ukrainian heritage, as it was written by a Ukrainian composer. And I mean, there's lots of good versions of it. There's a really nice Wynton Marsalis version. I don't even mind the Mannheim Steamroller version. It was in Home Alone. There's a John Williams version in Home Alone. They even use Carol of the Bells in that Netflix series Stranger Things. So it's, I don't know. I think it's a beautiful song, and very Christmassy to me.
It is. My number two is kind of a twofer. No pun intended at number two, but it's a little bit of a twofer. And that is the song Sleigh Ride. Very jazzy. I want to say, I don't know if the Boston Pops was the one that does the most well-known version of Sleigh Ride, but the version I particularly like, and actually the reason that this is a twofer is because it's pretty much the entire album is Harry Connick Jr.'s version of Sleigh Ride, because Harry Connick's big band is just, you can't compare. And that entire Christmas album is what I play nonstop on. Harry Connick's Christmas album and Diana Krall's Christmas album are the two jazz Christmas albums that I play pretty much all day on Christmas Day, because they're fun and they're relaxing and it's very chill and just really great musicianship in them as well. And so that's my number two, Sleigh Ride, but in particular Harry Connick's version and just his whole Christmas album.
It's a good album. There's another fun song on that. Must Have Been Old Santa. That's a jazzy kind of tune on that. But it didn't make my list. It didn't make my list. We're down to number one, and I'm going to let you go first.
Well, my number one is actually another one of your honorable mentions. Again, giant child right here, Amy Johnson. That would be me. And that is the Charlie Brown theme. Because to me, it is not Christmas until I see Charlie Brown's Christmas and I hear that music and all the kids are dancing in their goofy little dancing way on the stage while they're at rehearsal. And then you get Linus out there and lo, I bring you tidings of great joy with his little blankie and the little spotlight goes on him and the little Charlie Brown Christmas tree. It's just not Christmas until you've watched Charlie Brown Christmas. And so that song to me, that is Christmas. Like just hands down that is Christmas. And I must say, I cannot recall where we were covering a LaValle Rocket game, but at intermission, it was this season at some point. It might have even been Hartford or Springfield. At intermission, they bring out the little guys to play hockey at intermission. And that song was the song that they used as the background music while they played hockey at intermission. And I thought it was the perfect accompaniment to watching little guys play short rink hockey on the big rink. That was the perfect song for it. So
that's fabulous.
I love the Charlie Brown theme song.
A great choice. For number one, I'm going to have to choose what is the oldest Canadian Christmas carol, written back in 1642 by a Jesuit missionary. His name was Jean de Brébeuf. And it's called the Huron Carol. And Brébeuf, when he was at St. Marie Among the Hurons over on Georgian Bay, he wrote the lyrics, and he wrote them in Huron actually. And then it wasn't, like I said, in mid 1600s, it wasn't until the early 1900s that English lyrics were written. But just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful song. And it's been done by, you know, so many different Canadian artists. Tom Jackson actually, he doesn't really sing it. He just speaks it. But Lorena McKennitt and the Canadian Tanners, Bruce Coburn, Sarah McLachlan. It's just, just a really touching, and for Canadians, a very recognizable Christmas carol. And so the Huron Carol is my number one.
Very nice. Got some variety in there, both of us. Some overlap, but a little variety. So we want to know, though, because there are so many to choose from, what are your five favorite Christmas songs? And what are the five that you hate the most and wish would just die a fiery death in the pit of music death them or whatever? What are the five that you really hate? What are the five that you really love? So tweet those to us at the AHL Report or hit us up on Facebook with that. That was a fun Christmas list. We've got some more Christmas. I think we'll have another Christmas top five next week with some more items, which, you know, the question is it going to return to food anytime soon or not? Is, you know, we'll see. We'll all wait with bated breath. But thank you so much. Of course, folks, we want to make sure that you remember not only we appreciate so much that you tune in to listen to From the Press Box every Tuesday, but be sure to catch the other Rocket Sports Media podcasts that are out there. Of course, we have Habs Unfiltered. That's with Blaine and Treg. We have Habs 360, which is our live Montreal Canadiens-based podcast that's hosted by Chris G and Rick every Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern. Again, that's live, so you can call into that show and join in the conversation. And Rick, we have a new podcast offering just in the last week. And do you want to just quick give us a little pitch about Have a Listen?
Indeed, we do. The ink is not quite dry on the contract we just signed. and it's called Have a Listen, and a Montreal Canadiens podcast. But these guys are a lot of fun. Lewis and Gibby, and do a weekly podcast. And that's going to be added to our Rocket Sports Radio offerings. And another podcast for you and something a little bit different. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have for their podcast.
Excellent. So that is four different ways that you can catch all your news about your favorite Montreal Canadiens. And of course, with us here at From the Press Box, we're the AHL podcast. So all your news about the Laval Rocket and things happening in the American League and with prospects and with juniors, collegiate hockey, national hockey, those kinds of things as well. So be sure to catch us every Tuesday as you have been doing. Of course, you can always hit us up if you have any questions about the Laval Rocket or prospects or anything like that. Don't hesitate to get in touch with us on social media. You can find us, of course, on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find our original photography from the Laval Rocket on our Instagram accounts. But on Twitter, we'd love to hear from you about all sorts of things. And so feel free to reach out to at the AHL Report on Twitter. You can find Rick at All Habs on Twitter, and you can find me at Flyers Rule on Twitter. And so we look forward to hearing from you, of course. Don't forget to send us your top five lists. And Rick, thanks so much for joining me again for another great show from the Press Box.
Glad to be here, and we'll see you next week.
That's right. Be sure to come back again next Tuesday for another great episode of From the Press Box. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.